Chapter 11. Is to have enough to breathe. That is true enough in a sense, but your lungs are thinking about the air, if you are not. And so it is with your rich people. They may not be thinking of money, but they are breathing it all the while. Take them into another element, and see how they squirm and gasp. Lily sat gazing absently through the blue rings of her cigarette smoke. It seems to me, she said at length, that you spend a good deal of your time in the element you disapprove of. Selden received this thrust without discomposure. Why, yes, but I have tried to remain amphibious. It's all right, as long as one's lungs can work in another air. The real alchemy consists in being able to turn gold back again into something else, and that's the secret that most of your friends have lost. Lily mused. Dee, don't you think, she rejoined after a moment, that the people who find fault with society are too apt to regard it as an end, and not a means, just as the people who despise money speak, as if its only use were to be kept in bags and gloated over? Isn't it fairer to look at them both as opportunities, which may be used either stupidly or intelligently, according to the capacity of the user? That is certainly the sane view. But the queer thing about society is that the people who regard it as an end are those who are in it, and not the critics on the fence. It's just the other way with most shows. The audience may be under the illusion, but the actors know that real life is on the other side of the footlights. The people who take society as an escape from work are putting it to its proper use, but when it becomes the thing worked for, it distorts all the relations of life. Selden raised himself on his elbow. Gee, good heavens! He went on, I don't underrate the decorative side of life. It seems to me the sense of splendor has justified itself by what it has produced. The worst of it is that, so much human nature is used up in the process. If we're all the raw stuff of the cosmic effects, one would rather be the fire that tempers a sword than the fish that dyes a purple cloak. And a society like ours wastes such good material in producing its little patch of purple. Look at a boy like Ned Silverton. He's really too good to be used to refurbish anybody's social shabbiness. There's a lad just setting out to discover the universe. Isn't it a pity he should end by finding it in Mrs. Fisher's drawing room? Ned is a dear boy, and I hope he will keep his illusions long enough to write some nice poetry about them. But do you think it is only in society that he is likely to lose them? Selden answered her with a shrug. Why do we call all our generous ideas illusions, and the mean ones truths? Isn't it a sufficient condemnation of society to find oneself accepting such phraseology? I very nearly acquired the jargon at Silverton's age, and I know how names can alter the color of beliefs. S. He had never heard him speak with such energy of affirmation. His habitual touch was that of the eclectic, who lightly turns over and compares, and she was moved by this sudden glimpse into the laboratory where his faiths were formed. Ah, you are as bad as the other sectarians, she exclaimed. Why do you call your republic a republic? It is a closed corporation, and you create arbitrary objections in order to keep people out. It is not my republic. If it were, I should have a coup d'etat and seat you on the throne. Whereas, in reality, you think I can never even get my foot across the threshold? Oh, I understand what you mean. You despise my ambitions. You think them unworthy of me. Selden smiled, but not ironically. Well, isn't that a tribute? I think them quite worthy of most of the people who live by them. S. He had turned to gaze on him gravely. But isn't it possible that, if I had the opportunities of these people, I might make a better use of them? Money stands for all kinds of things. Its purchasing quality isn't limited to diamonds and motor cars. Not in the least. You might expiate your enjoyment of them by founding a hospital. But if you think they are what I should really enjoy, you must think my ambitions are good enough for me. Selden met this appeal with a laugh. My dear Miss Bart, I am not divine providence to guarantee your enjoying the things you are trying to get. Then the best you can say for me is that after struggling to get them, I probably shan't like them. She drew a deep breath. What a miserable future you foresee for me. Well, have you never foreseen it for yourself? The slow color rose to her cheek, not a blush of excitement, but drawn from the deep wells of feeling. It was as if the effort of her spirit had produced it. Often and often, she said. Be but it looks so much darker when you show it to me. He made no answer to this exclamation, and for a while they sat silent, while something throbbed between them in the wide quiet of the air. But suddenly she turned on him with a kind of vehemence. Why do you do this to me? She cried. Why do you make the things I have chosen seem hateful to me, if you have nothing to give me instead? The words roused Selden from the musing fit into which he had fallen. He himself did not know why he had let their talk along such lines. It was the last use he would have imagined himself making of an afternoon's solitude with Miss Bart. But it was one of those moments, when neither seemed to speak deliberately, when an indwelling voice in each called to the other across unsounded depths of feeling. No, I have nothing to give you instead, he said, sitting up and turning, so that he faced her. If I had, it should be yours, you know. She received this abrupt declaration in a way even stranger than the manner of its making. She dropped her face on her hands, and he saw that for a moment she wept. It was for a moment only, however, for when he leaned nearer and drew down her hands with a gesture less passionate than grave, she turned on him a face softened, but not disfigured by emotion, and he said to himself, somewhat cruelly, that even her weeping was an art. The reflection steadied his voice as he asked, between pity and irony, isn't it natural that I should try to belittle all the things I can't offer you? Her face brightened at this, but she drew her hand away, not with a gesture of coquetry, but as though renouncing something to which as he had no claim. But you belittle me, don't you? She returned gently, and being so sure they are the only things I care for? Selden felt an inner start. But it was only the last quiver of his egoism. Almost at once he answered quite simply, but you do care for them, don't you? And no wishing of mine can alter that. He had so completely ceased to consider how far this might carry him, that he had a distinct sense of disappointment, when she turned on him a face sparkling with derision. Ah, she cried, for all your fine phrases you're really as great a coward as I am, for you wouldn't have made one of them, if you hadn't been so sure of my answer. The shock of this retort had the effect of crystallizing Selden's wavering intentions. I am not so sure of your answer, he said quietly. And I do you the justice to believe that you are not either. It was her turn to look at him with surprise. And after a moment, oh, you want to marry me? She asked. He broke into a laugh. And no, I don't want to, but perhaps I should if you did. That's what I told you, you're so sure of me, that you can amuse yourself with experiments. She drew back the hand he had regained, and sat looking down on him sadly. I am not making experiments, he returned. Oh, or if I am, it is not on you but on myself. I don't know what effect they are going to have on me, but if marrying you is one of them, I will take the risk. She smiled faintly. It would be a great risk, certainly I have never concealed from you how great. Ah, it's you who are the coward, he exclaimed. As he had risen, and he stood facing her with his eyes on hers. The soft isolation of the falling day enveloped them. They seemed lifted into a finer air. All the exquisite influences of the hour trembled in their veins, and drew them to each other as the loosened leaves were drawn to the earth. It's you who are the coward, he repeated, catching her hands in his. She leaned on him for a moment, as if with a drop of tired wings. He felt as though her heart were beating rather with the stress of a long flight than the thrill of new distances. Then, drawing back with a little smile of warning, she'll look hideous in dowdy clothes, but I can trim my own hats, she declared. They stood silent for a while after this, smiling at each other like adventurous children who have climbed to a forbidden height from which they discover a new world. The actual world at their feet was veiling itself in dimness, and across the valley a clear moon rose in the denser blue. Suddenly they heard a remote sound, like the hum of a giant insect, and following the high road, which wound wider through the surrounding twilight, a black object rushed across their vision. Lily started from her attitude of absorption. Her smile faded, and she began to move toward the lane. I had no idea it was so late. We shall not be back till after dark, she said, almost impatiently. Selden was looking at her with surprise. It took him a moment to regain his usual view of her. Then he said, with an uncontrollable note of dryness, colon, that was not one of our party. The motor was going the other way. I know, she paused, and he saw her redden through the twilight. But I told them I was not well, that I should not go out. Let us go down, she murmured. Selden continued to look at her. Then he drew his cigarette case from his pocket and slowly lit a cigarette. It seemed to him necessary, at that moment, to proclaim, by some habitual gesture of this sort, his recovered hold on the actual. He had an almost puerile wish to let his companion see that, their flight over, he had landed on his feet. She waited while the spark flickered under his curved palm. Then he held out the cigarettes to her. She took one with an unsteady hand, and putting it to her lips, leaned forward to draw her light from his. In the indistinctness the little red gleam lit up the lower part of her face, and he saw her mouth tremble into a smile. Were you serious? She asked, with an odd thrill of gaiety which he might have caught up, in haste, from a heap of stock inflections, without having time to select the just note. Selden's voice was under better control. Why not? He returned. You see, I took no risks in being so. And as she continued to stand before him, a little pale under the retort, he added quickly, colon, let us go down. It spoke much for the depth of Mrs. Treanor's friendship that her voice, in admonishing Miss Bart, took the same note of personal despair, as if he had been lamenting the collapse of a house party. All I can say is, Lily, that I can't make you out. She leaned back, sighing, in the morning abandon of lace and muslin, turning an indifferent shoulder to the heaped up importunities of her desk, while she considered, with the eye of a physician who has given up the case, the erect exterior of the patient confronting her. If you hadn't told me you were going in for him seriously, but I'm sure you made that plain enough from the beginning. Why else did you ask me to let you off bridge, and to keep away Carrie and Kate Corby? I don't suppose you did it because he amused you. We could none of us imagine you're putting up with him for a moment, unless you meant to marry him. And I'm sure everybody played fair. They all wanted to help it along. Even Bertha kept her hands off, I will say that, till Lawrence came down, and you dragged him away from her. After that, as he had a right to retaliate, why on earth did you interfere with her? You've known Lawrence Selden for years, why did you behave as if you had just discovered him? If you had a grudge against Bertha, it was a stupid time to show it. You could have paid her back just as well after you were married. I told you Bertha was dangerous. She was in an odious mood when she came here, but Lawrence's turning up put her in a good humor, and if you'd only let her think he came for her, it would have never occurred to her to play you this trick. Oh, Lily, you'll never do anything if you're not serious. Miss Bart accepted this exhortation in a spirit of the purest impartiality. Why should she have been angry? It was the voice of her own conscience which spoke to her through Mrs. Treanor's reproachful accents. But even to her own conscience she must trump up a semblance of defense. I only took a day off. I thought he meant to stay on all this week, and I knew Mr. Selden was leaving this morning. Mrs. Treanor brushed aside the plea with a gesture which laid bare its weakness. He did mean to stay, that's the worst of it. It shows that he's run away from you, that Bertha's done her work, and poisoned him thoroughly. Lily gave a slight laugh. Oh, if he's running, I'll overtake him. Her friend threw out an arresting hand. W, whatever you do, Lily, do nothing. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.